Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning, everybody. This is Debbie Verney.
Good morning. This is Dave Kubikin.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to talk to you about estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. We'd love for you to be our first caller. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. We'd love to take your call. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Debbie. What's going on?
Not much. It was cloudy originally this morning in Saratoga, but then it cleared off. I took the route up by the track, and it was nice because they had the road blocked, and they had the horses going over to warm up. It was beautiful, beautiful horses. Today's the big day, you know. It's Travers.
Oh, who knew? I know someone who knew. Ben, who you got?
I liked Tis the Law. That's who I rooted for.
Tis the Law?
Yep.
Tis the law. How can you go wrong?
Yes, that's right. Tis the Herzog Law Firm. There you go.
Exactly.
Very nice.
Exactly. It was interesting yesterday. Every year, Albany Law School does CLEs in Saratoga, and this year they're remote, and they always have one of the professors that comes in and does presentation. It's usually on the Supreme Court, right? He talks about the justices and how things change and how these rulings happen and everything. He's excellent, but he always gives who he thinks is going to be the winner of the Travers. And last year he was actually right, which is very impressive. And then it was funny because he was like, well, we don't have any questions, so let's do this. If the Supreme Court justices were the horses in the Travers, which one would win?
Oh,
which one is in the best physical shape? So, you know, it was just funny. It was trying to make light of, you know, the whole situation. But it was a great presentation, and he chose Tis the Law. So that's the thing,
nice.
I think.
No guarantees for any listeners out there. We don't stand by these picks.
No, we don't.
Send all complaints to Ben. Of Magic 590. So, Travers, you know, what a weird world we're living in these days. I hope everyone out there is safe and that your families are okay and you're taking all the proper precautions. I can tell you, Debbie, you know, everyone still needs the documents that we do, and that's not some sort of advertisement. That's kind of like the truth. The office has been extremely busy recently because as the economy has opened up a little bit locally and as people have been more comfortable getting out of the house, some of their to-do list is going to the bank and you know, making deposits or it's talking to their financial advisor, and it's talking to their attorney to make sure their ducks are in a row just in case something awful happens, because something awful happening is a tick more likely than it used to be, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. I had a client, well, her family was my client, and she's a teacher. And she called me, and she said, I need to get my will done. And I said, oh, okay, no problem. She goes, with the way things are going right now and going back to school, she goes, I want to get everything in place. And I went, okay, we can do that. That's not a problem. I mean, it's kind of scary. I think that when this all started in March in New York City, they were busy, busy, busy because of everything that was going on there. And I think now that, like you said, the economy's open up, people are looking at their stuff and they're saying, you know, we really need to get this in place just in case.
Yeah, and, you know, new roles for people. Who knows what happened? You know, we had some of the listeners may know, I have a daughter who's 7, and we had a big conference call with the school and all the other parents about, you know, what are the procedures and what does the fall look like? Because the fall is not that far away, right? It's already Travers, so you know, we only got a couple weeks here. And, you know, at any point, it may be that the school is in our kitchen again as opposed to in a school. And the ramifications to our clients you know, many of our clients are grandparents. They're going to start being teachers themselves or caretakers because, you know, their kids, mom and dad, for these little grandkids, still have to go to work. It's just such an interesting time, and hopefully, because everyone's taking these precautions, the new roles that our clients have, grandmas and grandpas, they'll all be safe. You mentioned the call-in number, and I hope we do get some phone calls today, every Saturday, really. But we do have some really good topics that we should go through, Debbie. I don't know which one you want to start with first, but I think they're all pretty pertinent and all important, and gladly we'll be interrupted with your phone calls, by the way.
Right, and the phone number to call in is 518-476-5900. Again, 518-476-5900. So let's start with Community Medicaid.
All right. Well, what's going on with Community Medicaid? I've never heard of such a thing. Is there something called Community Medicaid, Debbie?
There is. Community Medicaid, as you always say in your presentations, is care on your couch.
Yeah. And the idea is as we get older, life is more complicated, we have more needs, it would really be nice to continue to live where we've been living or somewhere of our choosing as opposed to needing to go to a new place, something that's more in line with what you would consider a facility, assisted living, or nursing homes and memory care units. And for a bunch of different reasons, home tends to make the most sense for people, assuming it's safe, assuming that there's people available, ready, willing, and able to care for mom, dad, husband, wife. And the program historically has been incredibly easy to qualify for because unlike nursing home Medicaid, where there's a five-year look-back period, we could get anyone qualified on September 1st, meaning in 3 weeks, because there has been no look-back period for this program. And as Debbie and Jamie and Harry and I have been shouting from the mountaintops for about 3.5 months now, that's all changing come October 1st of this year. They're going to at least start implementing a 30-month look-back period. Now, we're hoping, right, Debbie and I are hoping that there'll be some changes announced where how they enact this 30-month look-back period and what it means for our clients who did something yesterday, right? They came and they created a trust yesterday. What does that mean if they don't need to file for, you know, Medicaid yet? They don't have this need yet, but they prepared a trust in 2020. Will they deal with a 2.5-year look-back period a year from now if they need to apply? There's some confusion there. We're hoping for some clarity. Right now, what we could say for sure, Debbie, is that if there's a need out there, right, husband, wife, mom, dad, someone has long-term care needs, and you're saying, gee, you know, it would be nice to be at home, the one thing we do know is that applications filed before October 1st, for sure, will not have that look-back period. The rest of it's somewhat of a gray area where I can't guarantee any result or any treatment by Medicaid. But the idea, Debbie, big picture, care at home as opposed to somewhere else. It's quite easy to qualify, particularly if we applied for someone before October 1st. And the second part of that, Debbie, and I'll turn it over to you, is that historically when there have been changes to Medicaid, they've had some sort of grandfathering in of transfers and trusts created before the date that this all goes into effect. So it's possible, maybe even likely, I want to be careful with my words, but the earlier people can come in and create trusts and put things in those trusts, not only does the clock tick on protecting money, but there is a decent shot that it turns out that there'll be some grandfathering in of those trusts and those transfers.
Well, that's what we're hoping, of course, yeah. And nothing has come out that's the law, right? Nothing has come out that's exactly says this is how it's going to be. And with everything going on in society and everything going on with the economy and stuff like that, right now New York is working on it, but they've kind of put it on a back burner because they have more important things to deal with. But we listen to all the news from the New York State Bar Association and from New York State, and we're on top of these things, which kind of brings me to a similar subject is we had two clients come in yesterday. They're now our clients. That they had another organization, a law firm or an organization, do applications for them for community Medicaid. And unfortunately, they were denied. And we are basically kind of cleaning up their messes, right? We're cleaning it up so that we can make sure that they get community Medicaid. And that's why we always say, you know, you really need to make sure that the person that you hire or the firm that you hire to do these applications to get you community Medicaid or to get you chronic care Medicaid know what they're doing and that they're going to follow through on it. The situation that we were dealing with yesterday, it was very sad because it was just a very simple tweak that we needed to make, a couple more documents we needed to file to get these people qualified, and it should have been done in the first place. So, you know, your old thing, you know, would you go to a ophthalmologist to have your heart checked? No, you wouldn't. You want to go to someone that actually practices in that area. And that's why we do offer free consults. We have people come in and we sit down with them and we tell them exactly what needs to be done and how we would do it. And it kind of goes from there. Whereas a lot of times if you hire another organization or a firm, they may or may not be experts in this field and be able to help you.
Debbie, David, we have a caller on the line. We have George from Colony.
Good morning, George.
How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question. Had a friend whose older parent was admitted to the hospital. The fella has a trust set up already, and they have power of attorney and all that. The question came up in the hospital, does he have a DNR? And I don't know. I was just thinking of it, listening to you folks talk about documents. And he does not have a DNR. And they asked the person who has the power of attorney about it, and they don't want to DNR him right now. But is that an automatic form that gets put in, or is that something separate? Because I have a trust with you folks.
So, Debbie, I'll at least start.
That's what I figured you'd start.
When I could tell you, if you're a client of ours, I know what you have. Okay, I can't speak for what other people have, but our client typically, right, a client comes into our office, whether it's a will you do, a revocable trust, a Medicaid trust, whatever. Typically, we want to check off those low-hanging fruit, the healthcare proxies, living wills, powers of attorney, because they're so important. So there is a difference between a power of attorney and a healthcare proxy. A power of attorney deals with non-medical decisions. A healthcare proxy, a living will, deals with medical decisions. Okay. So, however, there are people out there, believe it or not, George, who have done their documents online and download forms, and sometimes they have something called a power of attorney for medical decisions, and it's not really a power of attorney. They're kind of mixing language. So let's just assume his power of attorney is a regular power of attorney. It deals with banking and finances and insurance and whatever, right?
Yep.
He doesn't have a healthcare proxy. He doesn't have someone who could speak for him. Now, when you go to the hospital, hopefully, George, you haven't been in the hospital recently. Debbie, I sure hope you haven't been. I know that when you go to the hospital, one of the forms they'll give you is essentially like a healthcare proxy. You could fill out on the spot to say who can speak for you. So let's just assume he didn't fill out anything or he was unable to. And that's the reason why we want people. Yeah, that's exactly why we want people to do things on a sunny day for when it's a rainy day, right? Because you might not be able to fill it out at the hospital. Well, now we're kind of stuck, right? We don't have someone who can clearly make decisions for him. Depending on his family tree, there is, a priority list, I guess, for people who can't speak on his behalf. But if we get into a situation where, a DNR situation, a do not resuscitate situation, the hospital, I know what they're going to do. Deb, you know what they're going to do. They're going to keep everyone alive as long as possible because that's
what their oath says. Afraid of. Yep.
Right. So, it might get a little messy, right? And where the messiness would come in, really would be if there are family members who disagree with what should happen, right?
Yeah.
Maybe initially the hospital is going to be making sure that people are still alive. That's their job. And if it becomes a situation where we're going to deal with a very long issue, a painful issue, one that's never going to change, never going to get better, right, then the hospital will want to cover themselves, make sure they're talking to people who have authority to make these kinds of decisions. At the end of the day, I'd be confident that there would be family members in place that could make those decisions, even though there's no health care proxy or living will. There's legislation that's been passed that deals with it. But if there's an issue with one relative disagreeing with another relative and they're on equal standing in terms of decision-making, then we're in like the Terry Schiavo circumstances, which we really want to avoid. That's where we have family members. Yeah. You remember her. So
yep.
It's a little messy. Do you think that this person, this family member of your friend has the capability of signing something now?
Well, he's got memory problems started, and they told him he would never go home from the hospital.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that.
The thing I was concerned for myself was my daughters are on I'm the trustees of my trust and the health care and the power of attorney. I just wanted to know for my sake, if I'm in that situation, it doesn't have to be a piece of paper. They can just pull the plug automatically. That's what I'm concerned about.
Let me ask you, do you want them to pull it or do you not want them to pull it? Is your concern that they will or that they won't?
In that type of situation, absolutely, yeah. If I'm in that situation, absolutely.
Well, so, again, and when's the last time you came in, George? To our office?
For myself, it's been a while, probably a couple, 2 years.
Okay. I think you should come in again, or let's do a phone call. Debbie, myself, okay. Jamie, Harry, whoever you've met with before. Think it would be a good idea. Okay, you talk with Harry. He can have your documents in front of you and tell you exactly what they say. Go through the copies that you have in your hand, right? And at least we'll know where you stand, and maybe he could re-advise you on what the living will means and what the provisions in it. Because if it's our generic living will, right, your daughters will have the right to say that some treatment should be withheld if there's certain prerequisites. You're irrevocably and irreversibly in the dying process and so on and so forth.
Okay.
Not lovely things to talk about on a rainy-ish morning here. George, you're depressing us.
No, I want to bet a horse later in the Traverse, so I got to make it that long at least.
Tis the law, right, Ben?
Tis the law.
Tis the law.
I'm hoping.
That's what we're hearing.
I'm hoping,
too.
Right,
it's a local horse.
Yeah, thank you.
So, George, thanks for the call.
Have a great Saturday. You know, Dave, one of the things that when he was talking about the DNR and everything like that, there is an option that a lot of people are taking advantage of now is they're going to their doctors and they're doing the MOLST form,
yeah.
The medical orders for life-sustaining treatment. It's a bright pink form that you meet with your doctors and you sign it and the doctor signs it, and you can be very specific as to what you want done. And it's one of those forms where whenever you have a healthcare proxy living will, you're telling your people what you want done, right? And they can follow your direction. But with the MOLST form, the hospital is supposed to follow that direction because it's signed by you and signed by your doctor. So, for instance, if you have an illness, I had a friend that had brain cancer, and she knew that she was going to pass away. She didn't want to be resuscitated or anything else. So she met with her doctor, and she did the MOLST form because she wanted to make sure that if something happened and the paramedics were called, that she was not resuscitated. So that's something you might want to talk to your doctor about. Again, it's the MOLST form. It's MOLST, and it's a form that has to be done by you and your doctor together. And again, it's a bright pink form. So that's something you might want to talk to your doctor about.
For sure. It means that you've thought about this ahead of time, and that's kind of the key, Debbie, because we're not saying that life is going to be grand just because you have these documents in place. Life's going to be life, but at least you have a couple more options than you otherwise would, and there's more clarity. And, some of, you know, some decisions in life literally are life and death. This is one of them. And you have control over those kinds of decisions, and you have a say on them. So you should take the opportunity to have these basic documents in place so that, in particular, towards the tail end of life, things are happening the way you want it to. You have that control. Okay?
Yeah. Control is everything.
Absolutely. So before George's call, Debbie, you were saying, you were talking about Medicaid applications.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about our staff for a moment. I don't want this to be an infomercial for Herzog, but I guess it's kind of going to be an infomercial. So we have three Medicaid paralegals, right? And they're fantastic. And each one of them, Debbie, used to work for different departments of social service. They are to give you an analogy, they are IRS employees who would do auditing of tax returns, who are now preparing your taxes, which is pretty convenient, right? Because they know, as a reviewer, what they would look for, right? And as a result, we tend to, I don't know if it's 100%, because the county can always disagree with us in our interpretation of the facts, but I would say we almost always only apply for a client when we know they're going to get approved. Call me silly for saying it, but once we know all our ducks are in a row, that's when we know we can apply, because the approvals almost becomes a formality, in particular, Debbie, with community Medicaid. And that means we look under every rock to make sure there's no assets that the client forgot to tell us about. We look at the tax returns, and we make sure that our client's assets are exactly what we tell Medicaid they are, so we know there's going to be that approval. And then when it comes to income, we want to make sure we know all the sources of income our clients have and what the income they have will be, so that way we could plan when it comes to the income side. And I guess I'll turn it over to you maybe, Debbie. When it comes to community Medicaid, the care at home, which I think those clients you were talking about applied for, there's also ways to protect all of their income, which is not available when it comes to nursing homes.
Right. Whenever you're looking for community Medicaid, there is an availability of what's called a pooled trust. And everybody's like, a what? A pooled trust, like a swimming pool.
You mean
pool?
Another trust? Oh, my goodness.
And they're like, okay, I want one of those. Those are not documents that we set up. So those are documents that are set up. One of the organizations that we use is NYSARC, which is a not-for-profit organization. So the thing with a pooled trust is your excess income goes over to the pooled trust, right? And then the pooled trust pays your bills, and then Medicaid pays for your care at home. So say, for example, you're over on income, right? So you've got $2,000 more than you're allowed to have for community Medicaid, but you have
a mortgage.
On a monthly
basis.
Yeah, on a monthly basis. But you've got a mortgage, right? So you would send that excess income over to the pooled trust, and the pooled trust is going to pay your mortgage out of that money, or they're going to pay your property taxes out of that money. So that's your money that goes over to this trust to pay your bills that you're already paying anyway, right? You got to pay these bills one way or the other. And then Medicaid will pay for your care at home. And I always tell people, they're like, well, what about this? What about that? It sounds really silly, but it's all a math calculation, right? It's all a math calculation based on the situation for when we're applying. So we have to take a snapshot of everything that we have, all of the income that we have coming in, and from that point, figure out exactly what we need to do to get the person qualified.
Right. You know, it's easy to say I want to stay at home. It's sometimes easy to even get the approval to stay at home. But the income rules that Medicaid implements, without some further work, sometimes without these pool trusts that Debbie's talking about, and so we help enroll you in it. We kind of help set it up with the non-for-profit that operates these accounts. If we just go with what Medicaid's default preferences would be, your extra income, your income over about $895 a month, is going to go to pay for your caregivers, right? It's going to go to pay for Medicaid. And, okay, well, what's the big deal? The big deal is you still have taxes and insurance, right? The hot water heater still breaks. You still need a new roof occasionally. You still need food and clothing, I'm sure, right? So life still has its costs. And Debbie, the thing is, most of our clients in this situation, if you're going for community Medicaid, right, you're 65 plus, and chances are you're no longer working because you have long-term care needs that you need at home. You're on a fixed budget. And now there's this new expense called long-term care. We still have all those expenses you were talking about. Life still costs money. And now we have new costs, you know, associated with our care. So home could be great, but sometimes it's unaffordable unless we do the pooled income trust to preserve that extra income, because otherwise we lose it. And then how are we going to pay for all those life expenses that we have? So, you know, the devil's in the details, and you know, I don't want anyone sitting at home to say, oh, this is exactly what I need, this is not what I need. Big picture, you know, if your loved one needs some help, right, help's out there. There's help through the Medicaid program. There's help through veteran aid and attendance. There's help through different county programs available, and Meals on Wheels and all these different things. What's right and how much help, right? That's where we get into it. That's where our paralegals get into it. That's where Kim Hance, our geriatric care manager, gets into it, to use all of our resources to figure out kind of like the right plan for what's going on right now. And then, oh, by the way, Debbie, people keep getting older and their needs increase, so we're still there to help tweak the plan to make sure we're still dealing with whatever the needs are. It's pretty interesting stuff.
It is pretty interesting stuff. And again, it's one of those things where you need to either hire someone that knows exactly what the ins and outs are if you're planning on applying for it.
And just so I feel good about saying this isn't an infomercial stuff, there are a lot of places that can help you and know what they're doing. You just got to make sure you pick one of them because, you know, time is money. And if we don't have approval based on, you know, August 1st and the approval is based on October 1st for any one of the Medicaid programs that we deal with, that means that between August 1st and October 1st, someone had to pay the bills. I.e. Right. the client, i.e. that's a lot of private paying, and so be careful. Now, in some instances, Debbie, we say to clients, or especially their kids, you know what, I think you could probably handle the community Medicaid application based on this specific fact pattern, right? That's possible, and we'll say, you know what, you may want to just use Kim to help as a consultant when it comes to care. Right. Sometimes the kids have their arms really around the finances and kind of already have everything at the ready. All right. Yeah, there's times. It's not like you have to have us do it. It's just when it gets, and particularly when it gets messy, don't be, I forget what the saying is, pound fool or something like that. You just want to be careful because time is money, and the earlier we can get someone approved, you know, if a nursing home costs, what, $14,000-$15,000 a month, and we get you approved 1 month earlier, that's not difficult math to understand. So,
all right, anyway. At this point, it is the bottom of the hour. We're going to take our break right here. Coming up, the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour, right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
Morning, I'm Dave Kubikin.
And we are here from the Herzog Law Firm. We're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900.
476-5900. We had George the first half hour that called in, and we would love for someone to call in and ask questions because Dave and I could talk about all the stuff going on for the whole hour, but we would love to get your questions so that we know, you know, what you're thinking. And George was worried about healthcare proxies and living wills, and Dave and I have been talking about community Medicaid. Something that's come up a lot this week, Dave, well, a lot of weeks, especially with the weather being nice, are camps, right? Mm-hmm. How are you going to leave your camp to your kids? Your kids love your camp. They can't imagine life without going to camp. What are we going to do?
Yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate to live in a wonderful part of the country where this time of year, and even in the winter, if it's skiing cabins and things like that, people have lake houses, people have camps, and they're really important. Your kids grew up there. Sometimes your grandkids are running around where your kids used to. It's just a wonderful scene. I'm talking Saratoga Lake, the Catskills, Lake George. And, you know, we've clients who have places up in Lake Placid. They're great and provide a lot of joy and happiness. And eventually, families grow, uh-huh. and it gets a little crowded. And the questions, that a lot of our clients have is, well, how exactly could I preserve this situation for my kids? And obviously, a big part of it is protecting the asset to begin with, right? If there are these long-term care needs, we may have an issue protecting that asset because it's not a primary residence, right? It's not going to be exempt under any circumstances when it comes to Medicaid. So it's an interesting conversation to have. First and foremost, how do we protect the cabin, the camp, the lake house? But then there's a lot of family issues that go on with it. For example, now it's grandkids, and now instead of a family of four that wants to access it, it's really now 15 people who may want to access it between all the family members. Who gets to be there July 4th weekend? It's Travers weekend, Saratoga Lake property, right? Who's going to be up there for Travers?
I am.
No,
I don't care what 15.
Come on.
I don't care what 15 you're talking about. Actually, you know what? I can jump in here now that I've kind of ruined your thought process and tell you that we do have a caller. It's Mary Ann from Granville.
Hey, Mary Ann.
Good morning, Mary Ann.
Good morning. My question is it's about long-term care insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Why would a person want to get that if there's all these other avenues like pool trust and the Medicaid, community Medicaid? Can you, give me an answer on that?
Sure. So what long-term care insurance is, it's a form of insurance where you're paying every year, premium, and like any other form of insurance, car insurance, health insurance, if something happens where, that deals with long-term care, you could trigger your policy and it'll provide you with some benefits, right? That's the idea of it, and that's why you would have it. And sometimes people will say, I'd rather do that than do a Medicaid trust, right? I don't like the fact that my kid is going to be the trustee, or I don't have a good person who could be a trustee based on my back pattern, right? So I'm going to, maybe avoid probate by doing a revocable trust, but, I am concerned about long-term care. I'll do long-term care insurance. So as an example. But even when people do the Medicaid trust, or even when people do have long-term care insurance, it's not like you got to pick one road or the other. So we always talk about community Medicaid, care at home. We talk about chronic Medicaid, which is care in a nursing home, right? We don't normally talk a lot on the radio about assisted living. But certainly that's one way to get care, and that's an area that Medicaid usually won't cover. So sometimes people will have long-term care insurance, a couple $100 a day of coverage. So that way, if there's a long-term care situation and they choose to be in an assisted living, maybe they have a policy that's paying $5,000 or $6,000 a month that'll conveniently cover that facility. Okay. There's also hybrid long-term care insurance plans that also serve to be a little bit of life insurance. And we don't deal with these things other than to help clients who happen to have them already. But you may want to talk to someone who deals with long-term care insurance so you know all the different policies that are out there. There's a lot of makes and models. It's all about what your daily benefit is, how much money are you getting per day if you have a need, and then the question is, does that amount cover your actual needs? So every now and then, we have clients who come in who say they have long-term care insurance, but the amount of coverage they have is relatively low. It's going to cover assisted living and help them with those kinds of needs. But if they did end up in a nursing home, they'd still be out of pocket $9,000-$10,000. So they'll actually do both, right? They'll have long-term care insurance and they'll do a Medicaid trust in some instances. So, you know, I kind of see where your question's coming from, which is, well, why would I do that if I could do something else and do a trust once? Why should I pay a premium every year? People do it, and it's a business decision, and there's plenty of reasons I'm sure they'd give you as to why they do it.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. It's good information. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks so much for the call.
Have a good
day. You too.
Yeah, Dave, that was an excellent question, and we do have a lot of people that have long-term care insurance that come in, and we look at the policies, and a lot of people don't have any idea how much it's going to cost a day for a nursing home. So the average nursing home right now is around $450 a day. So people that have policies even that are like $300 a day, right,
mm-hmm.
they're still going to be short. $3,000-$4,000 a month that they're still going to have to come out of their pocket. So even if you have long-term care insurance, you really need to look at your estate plan. And also, I had a couple that came in this week that have long-term care insurance, and they just the rates keep going up and going up and going up, and they're like, we're on a fixed income. And if the rates continue going like this, we're going to have to cancel our policy. So we've kind of depended on this policy to pay for our long-term care in the future. And now, after all these years of paying for it, we may not be able to keep it. So I've had clients that have come in and set up a trust, even though they have long-term care insurance, and then after 5 years, they have that option as to whether they're going to cancel it or not.
Exactly right. Or they keep their policy. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the policies in general. I mean, I tell people all the time, my parents have a long-term care insurance policy. Their son absolutely is an estate planning attorney who talks on the radio sometimes about these things. And they went with long-term care insurance. And I'm happy they did. That's their decision. But guess what, everybody? That's not an estate plan, right? That's some long-term care coverage in certain situations. So what else did they do? They did a revocable trust, right,
uh-huh.
where they are the trustees. My brother and I are the backup trustees. And what does that do? Well, that obviously gets the right assets to the right people. Their estate plan is covered in terms of who gets what, when do they get it, and so on. But they avoid probate. So they're checking off the box of avoiding probate. They're checking off the box of basics. And then they're checking off the box, based on their coverage and their plan, the long-term care component. So that's how they decided to do it. But they did check all the boxes off. And when we say, Debbie, that it's not just like long-term care insurance or a trust, and a lot of times it's both, is because every one of those long-term care insurance policies, they don't help you avoid probate when it comes to your house. It has nothing to do with it. It's apples and oranges, right? So our job is to inform people about their options. Long-term care insurance absolutely is one of those options. But it's about creating a plan. Who gets what? How do they get it? To George's phone call before, right? What happens if I hit my head and I'm in the hospital? Who can speak for me? Your plan is like multifaceted. It covers such a big array. It's not just doom and gloom of you know, getting older and nursing homes and things like that. It's also what happens when I have three more grandkids and how do I take care of them and how do I want to leave things to them, right? Who's going to get my watch? Right, your estate plan covers all of these things, including the possibility of long-term care insurance. It's a great call.
Yeah, long-term care insurance only does so much, kind of like you said. And it's interesting that you were talking about a revocable trust, because revocable trusts are done for lots of different reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will do revocable trusts because they have property in different states to avoid probate here and then avoid probate there. And a lot of people do revocable trusts to plan for incapacity. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, sure. So you're a trustee, of your own revocable trust, typically, right? Real quick, just because we keep throwing around these words, what does revocable mean? What does irrevocable mean? Okay. In both instances, you're going to have control. In both instances, you're going to be able to be the income beneficiary of whatever you put in the trust. In both instances, you're getting the star exemptions when it comes to real estate you put in. No one's selling something, you know, selling your house without you knowing, right? There's a lot of similarities between revocable and the Medicaid trusts, which are technically irrevocable. The big difference between the two is that with revocable, you, the creator, are typically the trustee, because why not? And you, the creator, have the ability by yourself as creator of a revocable trust to undo it by yourself, okay? And my parents did a revocable trust. Their focus was, let's make sure we avoid probate. Let's make sure that if we do become incapacitated, right, there's immediately our two sons who could come in and take our role, take our spot as trustee to continue to do whatever needs to be done in the trust, continue to pay the bills when it comes to real estate in the trust, continue to do whatever's got to be done, right? So right. From that standpoint, we're dealing with not just, you know, an estate plan, who gets what when we die. It's also who can continue to manage our affairs or take care of this trust if there's an incapacity, right? If we don't agree with the decisions of our kids and we want to tweak who gets what and leave things to grandkids, we can still do that. And so revocable trusts deal with that. We have a second marriage, and, you know, my second spouse and I have kids from our previous relationships, right? Revocable trust can be great to make sure that we're taking care of one another while also making sure and guaranteeing that our respective kids are getting an inheritance, right? A lot of different ways revocable trusts could work. Now, Ben, I didn't forget. I was on a roll.
Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that and you said my name, because I had just turned my microphone on because we have another caller.
Oh, my goodness.
It is Diana in Albany.
Good morning, Diana.
Hi, Diana.
Good morning. I have a question about setting money aside for two other people in a trust. Can I do that?
So I guess my question is, what kind of money are you looking to set aside, and is it, what kind of trust are you looking for? So,
okay, I'm not sure. I have two nieces that were going to look out for my health care if I become, you know, disabled or, mm-hmm. you know, I need assistance. And one has health issues of her own, so we have a backup. And I want to put money, a trust aside for like $20,000 so that they have money to cover their expenses to take care of me.
So is this a trust?
Can I do that in a trust?
Well, I guess the question would be, so they're helping take care of you right now, right?
Not now.
Okay,
this
so
is in the future.
Okay. What, there's several different things that you could do. You may not need a trust just for $20,000. You said that she has medical problems of her own. Does that mean that she's on disability? Is that?
No, she's not. She's up and working and everything, but she has heart trouble and stuff like that.
Okay. So
there is a backup of my other niece.
Okay.
So they're both nieces.
So what you could do, because setting aside that money now, that might be money you actually need to have for your care, but you could
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think what will happen is I'm getting an inheritance, and mm-hmm. I'm also probably will eventually end up with Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to cover this before October 1st.
Okay. So what you could do is you could set up an irrevocable trust, put those assets in the trust, and then you could make the nieces your beneficiaries of the trust, right? So you could say,
okay, this much money is going into the trust and this much money is going to each of them at my death. And that way you're getting it out of your name so that...
I want it at my death. I want it, well, so they can take care of me.
So you want them to
be able to draw money out from it?
So the answer is yes, but it's not the way you're saying it would be. So one of the things we would want to do, okay, so it sounds like you want your own money to take care of yourself for a period of time, right, or at least that option. And we want
to take care and also to cover the expenses. See, one would have to travel quite a ways to come and take care of me. And there are expenses, and this would help cover their expenses. Or if they have to not work to take care of me.
Understood. So the general answer is yes. Everything you just said that you want to have happen, we can do. All right, it can be done. Okay, I promise you. The details of it may not be the best to discuss right now on the radio. Okay.
Well, of course not. I plan to come in and talk to Harry.
So let me talk to you about a couple of just general parts of it that maybe will help other people listening. Okay.
Okay.
So if we're talking about the Care at Home program, Community Medicaid. Right. As we mentioned, there isn't a look-back period, and if we applied before October 1st, at least for sure, based on the current law, we know they won't look back at all. So how you get down to whatever number we need to get you to, the 15,000 and change of assets that you need to be down to, they don't care how you do it. So if you said, hey, you know what, I'm going to give these girls 20 grand apiece right now just so that they have that, in case they need to use it for me, or they need to supplement their life because they're stopping things to help take care of me. Theoretically, you could do that if you wanted to. I don't think I would recommend it, but you could, because it's not going to affect your eligibility for that program currently.
Yeah, well,
Debbie was talking
about being in that range.
Well,
I'm nowhere near being needing help.
Understood. So that's where Debbie's suggestion comes in, which is, well, maybe you do create a trust, but the way the trust works, right, is that even though it's a Medicaid trust, I'm using air quotes, you can't see me, it's irrevocable, you can still get to the money that's in the trust, and you would do it with the help of the trustees, okay, who you control, and the beneficiaries who you control. But essentially what we do for a lot of people is that they'll set up a trust, they'll put a bunch of money in it, and then down the road, when they need the money or want the money, we help them take the money out. And that money can be used for anything. So give Stacy a call at the office. She'll set you up with Harry. He'll go through all the details with you. He'll spend as much time as you need. Big picture, everything you talked about, it can be done. Whether it's a good idea or how to do it, I'll leave that to Harry.
Certainly. Okay.
Thanks
I just thought
call.
I'd bring up the subject.
Thank you very much.
Great subject. Bye-bye. Bye-bye now. Yeah, that's the thing. It's a lot of times it's really difficult to figure out exactly what you need to do over the radio because you're not face-to-face and you don't know exactly what the financial situation is. And, you know, we were asking all the probing questions, but that's why whenever we have clients come in to meet with us, we have them fill out what's called a client questionnaire. So you kind of have to think of it like when you go to the doctors and they have you fill out that little questionnaire before you go in to see them. It's so we can diagnose what your situation is and give you the best options as far as your planning goes.
Absolutely. So, Ben, are you there, Ben?
I am.
Before I start talking about camps and lake houses, should I know if there's another caller coming in?
No, we're good.
Would you mind?
No, we're good.
Are you sure?
Yeah, positive.
You're positive. All right.
Yeah.
So
let me interrupt.
No. you are a mean person.
Where's Frank from Colony when you need him?
Frank's doing well. I talked to Frank a while back. I talked to him on the phone. He's doing really good.
Good.
Well, so I'm going to interrupt myself. So, Debbie, we've been doing a lot of webinars on Wednesdays and previous months. We'll do a whole webinar week. That webinar week is coming up this week, beginning on Monday, August 10th. And what webinar week means, everybody, is that at 2 p.m. each day, you'll be able to listen to us talk about different topics. And on Monday, August 10th, so this Monday at 2 p.m. The topic's going to be what we've started talking about, which is aging in place and the options people have to get long-term care at home. On Tuesday, August 11th, we'll be talking at 2 p.m. about basically a Q&A. So we have a bunch of questions we've gotten from clients that we'll be answering, and then it'll be kind of an open forum in the Zoom chat room for answering more questions that people may have. That should be pretty fun. Again, it's at 2 p.m. On Wednesday the 12th, we're going to be talking about COVID scams and other fraud out there and scams. Every now and then our clients get letters about how they can get, you know, the official copy of their deeds just for $99 and this and that. We're going to talk about all those. On Thursday the 13th at 2 p.m., we're going to be talking, it's our general webinar. It's called Estate Planning in Prime Time, everything from powers of attorney healthcare proxies through some pretty in-depth last-second Medicaid planning. It's a good general seminar. And then Friday, my favorite, 2 p.m., wills versus trusts, the differences, the similarities between wills and the different kinds of trusts, what they accomplish, what they don't, how they work together. If you want to register for any of these webinars, you go to our website, www.herzoglaw.com. You click on the seminar page, and then you just click on whichever webinar you want, and we'll send you a link. You could also call the office at 465-7581. That's 518-465-7581. And tell us you want to go to a seminar. There, you can go to all five if you want to. I challenge you, in fact, to do all five. And you could also email us at info@herzoglaw.com. Again, it's our webinar week next week, 2 p.m. every single day. We'll see you then. Debbie, may I talk about vacation homes?
Sure. Go ahead. Okay. It's all you, Dave.
Ben, are we good?
We're good.
Okay. So we were talking about, before the fantastic calls, by the way, I'll be interrupted anytime, about these camps and vacation homes, Debbie. And the interesting part isn't just avoiding probate with them. It's not just protecting them from the estate planning, from the Medicaid, from the long-term care standpoint, but it's literally how do our kids and our kids' kids coexist in something that's likely smaller than a primary residence, that's likely going to be available and a place where you want to be for a limited period of time, 3, 4, 5 months of the year, maybe longer, where we have now kids that live in different parts of the world, different parts of the country. We have grandkids that don't really care about the camp, but some that really do. So do you leave things equally to these kids and grandkids? Do they spread the costs, the taxes, equally amongst them? Do they all show up there on July 4th? Not during COVID, right? So maybe it's just one part of the family at a time. And, you know, we plan for the future, and there are islands in Lake George. There are camps in the Adirondacks and in the Catskills that have documents in place that plan for the next 100 years of that camp, right? If I get divorced, does my spouse now own a piece of that camp that no, and nobody likes her? No, I don't know, right? It's what the rules are. If I pass away, right, does it go to my spouse? Because that's what my estate plan says, or is there something in the way that the property is owned? Are there rules? Did we create an LLC? Is there a trust specifically for this property that dictates who could be an owner, who cannot be an owner, how costs are going to be spread out amongst everyone? Is it fair that if I only go up one weekend a year, I'm paying for one half of the expenses? Debbie, you and I own a property together, right, a vacation home. And you say, Dave, I want to sell that property. I say, no way am I selling that property. How would that go down, right? Is there a discount if I want to buy you out? So all of these questions have specific answers to you and your family. And if you just treat the camp and vacation home like any other asset, you are planning for disaster, because these questions will come up after you're gone, and your kids will be fighting over it, and there won't be any clarity, okay? So I can't emphasize this enough. This is, 'tis the season for these types of properties to be used and enjoyed. Take the time to plan appropriately, whatever that happens to mean. What do you think,
Debbie? What do I think? It's interesting because when you start planning for this generation, right? So even if you set up a trust, you've got to think about that too. I have a friend that he's actually an attorney, and he set up the trust for his parents, right? And he has a brother and sister, and everything has gone fine with the three of them, but they're aging out now, right? And so he has two kids, his sister has three kids, his brother has five kids, right? So where does it go from here, right? So it was easy when there was just three of them that were sharing the camp and sharing the expenses and everything like that. But what happens now when you're moving it down to the next level, right, to the grandkids? Right? So who's going to be paying for that? And a lot of times these kids, like his kids live in Massachusetts, his sister's kids live all over the place, and they're probably not going to be able to use the camp. So who's going to pay the expenses? A lot of people will put money in a trust, right, to pay for expenses and stuff like that, but that's not going to last forever. It's a difficult situation. You really need to think about it because it could separate the whole family.
Yeah, it's certainly a unique scenario, and the good news is you control it all, and you can make it whatever you want it to be. The bad news is you got to think about it now, and you got to think about, you know, families not getting along now, even when they are getting along now, right? You're thinking about bad things in the future, even though things are okay right now. Sometimes we create LLCs, so that way an LLC has shares, and that becomes pretty easy. We put all the shares into your Medicaid trust, and then upon your death, those shares go as follows, and these shares are split amongst your family tree. And then in the operating agreement for that LLC, we could put all these strings. You know, only a blood relative could be a shareholder, right? A first spouse has life use of the camp as well, but a second spouse wouldn't. Anything you want it to be, it can be. But again, there is that level of planning you need. And it's, you know, in this area of the world and the state, it's, you know, the best part about up here are these lakes, camps.
And you guys, that's our cue. You guys have a great, great weekend. And we look forward to talking to you next weekend.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.